Welcome to the 108th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. My intro music is different. GarageBand seemed to have an update, and I'm getting ready to run in the morning, so we might as well have some cheery music to get ready to have you go out and do your exercise. So I hope you're maybe listening to this while you're walking or running. Either way, I hope you can settle in and enjoy yourself. If you've listened to this podcast before, you know it's all about plant-based nutrition and achieving wellness. I also talk a little bit about endurance running and triathlon. I'm currently training for the Biltmore Half Marathon and Whole Marathon, the second week in March, and that's going pretty well. Starting to pick my mileage back up from my last Miami Marathon at the end of January. I'm starting to add a little weight training a couple times a week to help me with the hills, so I hope that'll be okay. I also have a hobby of a backyard garden. It's nice to produce and see the plants that you eat. So we have tomatoes ripening, eggplant ripening, Brussels sprouts. The fruit trees here in Florida are starting to blossom, so I'm hoping to have some mangoes. There's these little tiny mangoes hanging on the tree about the size of an olive, and the avocado trees are blooming. So it's all exciting stuff. A nutrition class, one class finished and the next class started. It's always exciting to have a new group of students. The nutrition class is 6 weeks long. So we start with, I cook and do food demos every class. And this week we started with a potato soup. I introduced the Instapot pressure cooker because I think that's a great device for people to have. So we did potato leek soup in that. I also start with some chopping and cutting skills. So I made a sushi salad, and that basically is everything you put in a vegetable sushi, but just in a big salad bowl. And so we had that. We also talk about the overview of what plant-based nutrition is. And so there's a lot of questions on, you know, the why and the how early front. So we get those nasty questions of where do I get my protein and calcium out of the way. We start talking about how it actually works to help you as far as nitric oxide production. We look at blood vessels and how to heal them. So it's an exciting time. It can also be a little bit of a scary time because it's such a big change. And, you know, it's hard to, you know, there's so many schools of thought, whether you do this change gradually, a little bit at a time, you know, start with breakfast, start with lunch, go in all at once. You know, some people's personality are more black and white. They just kind of flip the switch, throw everything out and go. The thing that's different about my class is they're all patients the majority are my patients. So they have cardiovascular disease already. And so we're trying to, you know, get things reversed and get people off their meds as quick as we possibly can. So, you know, I kind of push for, you know, a big change quick, which is not always easy and maybe not always the best, but it's good to see results so that you can help sustain yourself. But, you know, at the same time, I don't want people to be overwhelmed. So we try to, you know, focus on at least look at the end result of what you can achieve with whole food plant-based nutrition with regards to getting people off their diabetic medications or cholesterol medications or hypertensive medications, getting their chest pain to go away, getting their diabetic neuropathy to settle out. But we also want to focus on the short term, what you need to do. So we start with the simple things like making some soups and making some salads and, you know, how do you get a standard breakfast in that's healthy and kick out some of the bad things early on? I heard somebody, talk about, you know, oftentimes we want to compare ourselves to the guy that's achieved the most, you know. So if it's like if you're swimming and you're just starting to learn to swim and you compare yourself to a dolphin and you're frustrating that you can't swim like a dolphin, it's really not where you want to be. Same way with plant-based nutrition. I don't want people to get frustrated that they're not the, Dr. Esselstyn purpose, the perfect, nutritional program. So we have people in the class that, you know, well, Dr. Esselstyn says this or Dr. Furman says this, and it's like, okay, yes. And that's what we're trying to achieve, but you can't be, you know, frustrated at first if that's your if that's not where you are right up front. We have a student in the class that's completely plant-based, but, you know, we start talking. It's like, well, he, you know, uses a lot of oil and he eats a lot of nuts. On the other hand, he's lost a significant amount of weight. His cholesterol is lowered. He feels great. So he's moving in the right direction, and he's at the class to hone in his diet and hone in his skills. And I think perhaps get his wife on board a little bit more. So there's a reason for everybody being there, and they're people in different stages of their awareness of plant-based nutrition, even awareness of their disease and what they can actually do to help themselves. So it's a fun time to start, and it's enjoyable to watch people advance through the stages. What I have noticed is since I've gone to a class every week instead of every other week, that 6 week goes really fast, and then people are left with it, you know, to be on their own at the end of 6 weeks. So I'm going to talk a little bit a little later about how I think I want to transition that into making it more sustainable for everybody. This past week was Valentine's Day, so happy belated Valentine's Day. I hope you made it through without falling off the plant-based wagon too bad. For our Valentine's Day dinner, my daughter actually made a great soup. It was a carrot potato soup. And she had a great salad, and we had chocolate-covered strawberries. So that was great. They were dark vegan chocolate chips that she melted and put over strawberries. So that was a pretty healthy dessert, all in all. Sometimes, you know, these holidays, so to speak, can really set people off, and they go out to dinner, and they feel as though they may be cheated if they didn't have the old, steak dinner or lobster dinner. I saw a lot of posts on Facebook of these greasy giants, dinners, and I kind of giggled to myself. You know, now we like to look at a pretty plate, lots of color, and that's kind of what I showed the students this week, that, you know, when you make that sushi salad and you have the red cabbage and the carrots and the different kind of greens and cucumbers and different colored peppers, as well as the, you know, pink pickled ginger, and it's a very pretty, eye-pleasing salad to look at. So, I hope that, you were able to stay on the plant-based wagon. If you weren't, then, you know, hop right back on and, think about how you can do it differently for the next holiday. So, and incorporating things that just look really good in a lovely presentation, makes people really happy. Last night I was out to dinner, interestingly, with a cardiothoracic surgeon and a CEO of a hospital. And they had chicken and salmon and thought they were eating really healthy. And the chef at the Twin Isles Country Club where I had my conference, I told him I was coming. And so he had me a big triangles of grilled tofu over a black bean puree with rice and grilled zucchini and carrots without any oil. So it was, and the presentation was beautiful. And when my food came out, they looked at it and they looked at theirs and it's like, oh, so if people just see how beautiful the food is, and of course it tastes beautiful, it goes a long way to helping. So, if you're planning to go out to dinner, maybe this weekend you're going out for your Valentine's Day dinner, call ahead and see if you can get a plant-based meal prepared at the restaurant that you're going. Most of the chefs like to be creative and do things like that. Everyone has an eye-opening experience when it comes to changing their nutrition. I read A Diet for a New America by John Robbins and, changed myself, but it wasn't until I saw the movie Forks Over Knives that I decided to incorporate plant-based nutrition in my practice, and it was life-changing and practice-changing. And I've always known, even before I was on a plant-based diet, that I wanted to incorporate nutrition and exercise as preventative measures in my practice for cardiology, but I wasn't quite sure how. And then once I, started doing the nutrition classes, it became much more evident that I was making much more progress as far as helping people to get off their medications and to feel better and to become more healthy through plant-based nutrition. And as a cardiologist, this is a kind of a crossroads, and I've seen it. I watched Dr. Esselstyn was a breast cancer surgeon, and, now he talks about plant-based nutrition. Dr. Joel Kahn is a cardiologist, and he was an interventional cardiologist, and now he's all about plants. And I believe Dr. Garth Brooks did bariatric surgery. I don't think he does much in the way of bariatric surgery now. For the most part, it's all about plant nutrition. And I've kind of fallen along those ways at the same time that they have. A couple of them preceded me. But once you start to realize that you can help people through plant-based nutrition, those procedures lose their appeal. And, quite frankly, most of the time they're not necessary. But it's a difficult transition for a physician to make because we weren't trained that way. And we've put a lot of time into becoming the doctors that we were. And it's hard to say, it's hard to change the path because it's such a dramatic path. And I think that's kind of what scares a lot of doctors for maybe opening their eyes to this, because it's such a dramatic change in the way we practice. And, even if you start with the practice of medicine, that word is tough to, even think about now, because, when you say the practice of medicine, traditionally, in medical school, you learn about, anatomy first, and then you learn about the disease processes, and then you learn how to treat them. And it's all about pharmaceuticals for the most part. Or there's two paths. There's either they practice medicine or practice surgery. And if you're practicing surgery, it's practicing cutting things out to make things better. And if you're practicing medicine, it's diagnosing a disease and treating people largely with medications. I love the diagnosis part of medicine. Maybe a creepy thing to hear, but if I'm in the mall or I see somebody, I can make the diagnosis. What's wrong with them as they're walking down the street? And part of the practice of medicine is actually the practice of talking to people and getting their story and finding out when things went wrong and what went wrong and what it feels like and getting all the nitty-gritty details about that. It's an art, and it's what medical students learn to do, is to be able to take a history and sit and talk with people and find out, exactly what's wrong and the different symptoms. And, when it comes to chest pain, this is still February and heart month. The chest pain, the shortness of breath and decreasing energy and a pressure in the center of the chest radiating to the jaw or the neck. It's different than if people have, I have a sharp twinge, or if I have a chest pain when I take a deep breath. Those can all mean different things. Or my chest wall hurts when I touch it. Certainly if you're having a heart attack, it doesn't hurt to touch your chest. It's deep inside. So those are things that medical students learn to ask. And, you kind of hone in on the diagnosis of what's going on. It's been a different evolution for me with regards to plant-based nutrition, because now I hone in on what's the dietary problem. What's the issue as far as what is their present state of nutrition? What do they consider a healthy diet? And I always start with, what'd you have for dinner last night? Because it also reverts back to, when I deal with people with heart failure, because oftentimes they don't realize, everybody knows not to use the salt shaker. Now, whether they don't use the salt shaker is a different, bird all in of itself. But people don't realize how much salt is in the food. So with heart failure, it's oftentimes a history to see where the salt's coming in their diet. So a lot of times it might be a rotisserie chicken that they got, at the grocery store. So I haven't been eating out, but they picked up food. Or it's the, ham and cheese sandwich at lunchtime. Sometimes it just adds up to, with the salt in general foods over the course of the day. There's salt in milk, there's salt in the cheese, there's salt in the ham, there's salt in the chips, and it just adds up over the day. Again, the salt in a jar of sauce. I had a patient in the hospital this week that, she came home and had, and this is horrible, leftover biscuits and gravy. She's not plant-based, obviously, from a local greasy spoon. And then, her evening meal was Alfredo sauce out of a jar. She ended up in the hospital back in heart failure because she has bad kidneys and couldn't process all the salt. So that's taken a history to find out what happened. I get consulted that she's in heart failure. So they assume that it's her heart that, you know, gave out or something acute happened with her vessels or anatomy. But really what happened acutely was her dietary changes or her dietary choices. So that part of, you know, being able to take that dietary history becomes very important in the practice of medicine, especially in the practice of nutritional medicine. So I still like all that, and I'm very intrigued by it. You know, oftentimes my nurse will say, you know, their cholesterol is still up despite them being plant-based, or they were trying, but their cholesterol is still high. And so then I go into the room and we start talking about their diet. And oftentimes we find, you know, things that they've eaten that are causing their cholesterol to still be up, you know, and the biggest culprit is typically added oil that they put on their food, or oil that they cook with, or do they eat out a lot and eat out of places where there's a lot of oil in the food that they didn't even realize. Sometimes this can be as crazy as crackers. People are so afraid of eating bread that they start eating crackers and they have a lot of oil in them. Of course, then what they put on the crackers usually has oil in it. So it becomes a detective type of process to try to figure out where people are and to help them, you know, to make the changes. So that part, you know, that's still, you know, that evolves in time as you learn to, you know, what has oil and the different foods and where the roadblocks can be for people. And sometimes it's just getting people to be aware of what they actually do. Sometimes people think that their diet and their nutrition is stellar and that they're, you know, they'll flat out deny that they're doing one thing. And then when I start talking to them about their dietary history, well, that one thing that they said they didn't do comes up multiple times. And so it's helping people to look at themselves and look at their and look at what they've eaten and become more aware and perceptive of what they're actually eating, because it's something we don't pay a whole lot of attention to most of the time. So now in my office, I take my usual history. What kind of symptoms, people's blood pressure, they're having blood pressure problems, dizziness, chest pain, shortness of breath, and a dietary history becomes part of that as well, to see what they're eating and what they perceive is whether or not they have good nutrition. And a lot of times, most of the time, people say they eat pretty healthy, you know, and then I ask them that, you know, okay, name me your like healthiest day that you can come up with as far as eating. And usually it's a standard American diet with maybe a healthy twist that it's, you know, lean chicken or mainly fish, or there's vegetables in there, or I try not to eat sugar. So, you know, people are definitely trying, but obviously it's just a version of a standard American diet. So then compared to the way it used to be, you know, it used to be I look at their labs and prescribe cholesterol medication, look at their blood pressure, you know, maybe adjust their blood pressure medications if they were having chest pain. You know, add medications for chest discomfort, perhaps schedule diagnostic tests if I hear, you know, any kind of valve problems, a stress test may be ordered. Now it's kind of different. Now I back up my chair and, you know, and say, let's talk. You know, let's talk about nutrition and how it plays a role in your health. So it's really, really changed my practice. So I spend a large portion of time with people educating them on the options of, you know, as opposed to just going on with medications and testing, you know, that there are nutritional options. And I also try to bring to light the, you know, the perception of, you know, the you go see a doctor and they're taking care of you by following your problems. And so they know what your problems are and they know you and they're trying to help you with medications. Yes, but the reality of it is they're not reversing any disease and they're just kind of following your problems as you kind of fall apart over the years. So I have to kind of bring that up to, you know, let's change directions here. Let's make a plan about reversing it. So it's actually really, really changed my practice. And, you know, now when I do the hospital part, you know, if somebody's in the hospital with chest pain or heart failure, I bring the nutrition into that. And, you know, we talk about what they're eating and how might they better help themselves. And I find myself not wanting to do procedures. I find myself wanting to delay things and to try to get them to change nutritionally. The prescribing medications for various things is not as exciting. It's not exciting at all. The other part of cardiology, obviously, is when somebody is really in the middle of something bad, they can't breathe, they're having terrible chest pain, and we have to do an emergent procedure. But the reality of time in my practice, I'm not an interventional cardiologist. That's fairly rare. When it happens, I take care of it, and I feel very comfortable in caring for the acute situation and talking to families in an acute situation. But that part's pretty small. And it's usually this mundane, kind of boring stuff compared to the nutrition. So I'm coming to a crossroads with what actually medicine is for me. And it's becoming more of nutritional medicine, or medicine through, plant-based medicine. And it's a little bit difficult to try to make, to come to terms with it. What do you call yourself? Are you opting out of being a physician? Are you copping out by not doing what you did, maybe what you were trained for? I know that that's not the answer, but you can see how that's a little bit of a dilemma. People expect you to fix things quickly for them, and nutritional medicine is not a quick fix. So sometimes, people, may initially be let down a little bit that, one, that they get to participate, and two, that it's not that quick a fix, that they can just kind of put this behind them and go on. And, I think that plays a role in the difficulty of it. It's not set up to be talking and taking time with people. Get a set of people give you symptoms, and you give them a treatment, and you go on, and it's do your electronic medical record documentation and move on to the next person and admit people and discharge people. It's not set up for nutritional medicine and talking to people and formulating a treatment plan and working with someone. And that makes the hospital part of all this much less exciting. Change in the way I diagnose people, it's a change in how I treat people. And how do you make that work in today's environment? And that's kind of where I'm kind of coming to, is that I'd like to be able to spend more time with people and develop these plans. And like I said, the nutrition class, it lasts for 6 weeks, but it's not enough. I think people need support for 3, 6, 9 months, a year before they really feel comfortable and can stay on track, not fall off the wagon, understand all the psychosocial aspects of it, really accomplish good change. And, as you can, if you've listened to any of the other podcasts, when I've, interviewed people like Justin and Josh LaJohnny, they're journey was over a year, and they've refined it over a year, and it's taken that time to really get the hang of things. And different people require different amounts of support. So that's how I'm trying to focus my practice now. And I want to work more and more with people that want to get healthy, but I also need to get the message out to people that don't know that nutrition can play such a role in them becoming healthy. Medicine man, healer, surgeon, the word doctor itself means to teach. So it's just, I guess, wrapping your head around how that teaching goes and what the medicine entails. The medicine, instead of being pharmaceuticals, it actually becomes, food, like it did way back when. Doctors aren't dieticians, doctors aren't pharmacists. We kind of incorporate everything into the practice. There's just not that much of a definition for a medical doctor that does nutritional medicine. So it's forging a new territory, I guess. And it's exciting, but it's kind of like the Christmas cartoon, The Land of Misfit Toys. It doesn't quite have the place just yet in traditional medicine. A little bit more risky, because if I talk about plant-based nutrition with someone that has chest discomfort, and we go over what they need to eat as far as to produce nitric oxide so their arteries will dilate, the greens, kale, Swiss chard, beets, beet tops, cabbage, collards, Brussels sprouts, broccoli, cauliflower, that produce nitric oxide. If they don't eat those things, and or they eat those with a steak, which kind of counteracts it, if you look at the pathway, then they won't get the results, and it's deemed as a failure. And again, when you take that back into people's perception of what they're eating, you know, there's often, I did everything you said, and yet I didn't lose weight. That happens with every nutrition plan, because there's just not a perception of what they eat day in and day out. So it's risky as far as failure. And, you know, no doctor wants to fail. That's for sure. I certainly don't want to fail. I want people to do well. So you really, some people you really have to spend a lot of time with. It's not every 3 months or quarterly or every 6 months to be able to get this point across. And, you know, I don't want, you know, any failure out there in this land of plant-based nutrition is seen as, see, I told you so, it doesn't really work. And, you know, so there's a risk to the general plant-based movement when, you know, it doesn't go right. I think the overall benefits are much greater. Sometimes the benefits are so great it's hard to believe, because when we're treating someone's hypertension with plant-based nutrition, we're also decreasing their cancer risk, decreasing their diabetes risk, decreasing their general body inflammation risk. And it's hard to believe that one way of eating can affect so many different things. But, you know, that's why all these diseases are, you know, lifestyle diseases. And it's individual type process. You know, when somebody comes in and they have a blood pressure of 150 over 90, it doesn't matter that much as far as their differences. We treat them pretty much the same unless they have another confounding illness. So if you have renal disease, we may pick one blood pressure drug. Or if you have a fast heart rate, we may pick a different blood pressure drug. But there's just not that much variety. But when a patient comes in and we try to change these things with nutrition, we really need to know where they're at. You know, were they a junk food, drive-in window person that just gets a tremendous amount of salt, and when we bring them back just a little bit, we're going to get great results? Is it somebody that's been the victim of eating, you know, a high saturated fat, high cholesterol diet for all their life, and they have a lot of plaque in their disease, and it's going to be, you know, a little bit more difficult? To do an aside of that, I had a patient this week I just talk over the years with about plant-based nutrition. She has really no desire to become plant-based, but we talk about it every time and how the benefits she can get the benefits from her valvular heart disease and her blood pressure from eating a better diet. And she was having very difficult to control blood pressure. And I convinced her to try to eat beets. She liked beets a lot. So she started actually eating beet juice. And she came to see me, and her blood pressure was 114. And she was so excited. She hadn't had any problems with her blood pressure. And what she had done is she started taking beet juice 3 times a day. And it's, you know, it's really leveled off her blood pressure. And she feels quite good in her 80s. So she takes care of 3 or 4 dogs and birds and everything, and has a tremendous amount of energy. She hasn't lost much in the way of weight, but her blood pressure is normalized and her breathing is improved, and she's doing quite well. So, you know, just hitting little things here and there with people can make all the difference in the world in a lot of ways. By not announcing her, but I'm going to make it official today that I'm going to change my practice of medicine into a membership program where people can come and see me, and we'll do the same workup as far as a history and physical and assessment of their problems, but we'll plug them into a treatment plan of how to get healthy through plant-based nutrition. And we'll develop steps along the way to see where they are, assess their functional capacity and their mobility, to see what kind of exercise they should be doing, to see what kind of a nutrition, plant-based nutrition path that they should be taking, whether they're having some acute symptoms that we need to be really aggressive with and get them eating that 4 cups of greens and get the oil out of their diet. Can we do things more slowly? What's the weight goal that people will have? And then follow them very closely. Look at their risk for diabetes, assess those, follow how they go away, follow how the diabetes reverses, take people off their medications. And that's going to require a lot of time with individuals. And the other thing that I want to be able to do is offer that nutrition program to every patient every week. And so they'll be able to get ongoing nutrition classes, because the reality of it is, if you're going to change your nutrition, you need help, and you need to be able to plan your menus and feel comfortable with what to do. I had a patient this week that, you know, he's not eating plant-based anymore because he finally came out and said it. His wife was sitting there, that it was too difficult for his wife to make two different meals a day, because she'd have to make one for her and one for him. Now, you know, the first thing that you know comes to mind is, well, you know, you're a big boy, you can make some of these meals on your own. The second thing that comes to mind is that, well, you know, why doesn't she eat that way too? It would be healthy for both of them. But nevertheless, that's not where they are, so they both regressed. So the idea in that situation would be to, and then we started talking about why it is that she feels it's so difficult to prepare, you know, and not eat that way. And, you know, she came back to that they're very busy and they do a lot of outdoor activities and they like to eat their main meal early in the afternoon, so she doesn't have a whole lot of time to prepare, especially two meals. So I started giving her ideas about, you know, why don't you have soup ready, you know, so you can make a soup in an Instapot, or have some soup made from the night before so that you could have that and have a chopped salad. You know, the Eat Loaf from the Esselstyn's book is a great thing to have that you can warm up. You know, that usually when you prepare that, it makes two loaves. To have some sort of a casserole that you could even make the earlier in the day so you can heat it up. And, you know, I talked about when we go for our 100-mile bike rides. Certainly when we come in, we're very hungry. We want to eat right away. So we want food to be there that doesn't take a whole lot of time to cook, because you want to eat. So what can you do in the meantime? And by talking with her, you know, it became, she became very much, much more interested and started to, you know, you see the wheels turning about how she might pull it off. So I think that, you know, the new way of structuring the office, that I can spend more time with people to address what their problems are. How do you best change people, you know, and everybody's a little different as far as what their problems are, what the struggles are. Some people are very good cooks. They're just cooks of the standard American diet, and they can tweak it really, really quickly. Other people, they really need help with cooking. It's amazing, you know, how many people that just the chopping of the vegetables is a big a detractor for them, because they just don't have good knife skills. Because if you haven't chopped a lot of vegetables, you may not be that good at it, or you may not have much of experience with it. A lot of people haven't bought fresh vegetables. So just learning quick ways to chop up a bunch of lettuce or chop up cabbage and cucumbers really quickly to make a salad is real helpful. I did that sushi salad at the class, you know, so I chopped up all the vegetables in the big bowl for, you know, serving of 18. And they saw whether, you know, that it didn't take very long at all to get that chopped up, even on a, you know, not great surface. You know, I had my travel cutting board, and the table was lower than I like. But even in that situation, I could still get things chopped up in 10 or 15 minutes for that big salad. So, you know, just demonstrating those skills and people getting that, I think will make a much bigger impact. And the other thing is that taking people off of medications, because when people start to have success, we can take them off their medications very quickly. And, you know, a lot of physicians aren't comfortable with taking people off of medications because they've never taken anybody off of medications before. We only add medications. So they're really afraid that they're going to have some big rebound and, you know, get into trouble. Or they're, again, if they were to fall off the diet and we take their medications off, then obviously their blood pressure will go back up and it'll be just a vicious cycle. So I think that the program will be much more successful, one, because they'll have the added education, added support. We'll take them off their medications, but we'll also keep supporting them through that first year so that they're able to sustain that way of eating, become more confident in it, and you know, we'll be able to keep them off their medications, and plus their disease process will improve. So I'm looking forward to implementing that. I'm going to be working with a team to help me convert my practice. I'll also be able to do, you know, more telemedicine and more programs that way. So I think it'll be a great thing. And hopefully we'll keep our patients out of the hospital. Right now we do a good job at keeping most of our patients out of the hospital because I see them on a frequent basis. But, you know, through the sick people, you know, on a very sick people on a frequent basis. But now, you know, hopefully we'll be able to make even a more impact so that we can keep more people out of, you know, the hospital for lifestyle related problems. On last week's episode, when I was talking about the lack of vegan options or plant-based options in the hospital, and as an update, I am working with them, and they're going to have a plant-based menu option available that's actually going to be in their electronic medical records, and we're going to be able to tie it to the nutrition services, so it actually be a salt-free, sugar-free, oil-free menu. It's just starting, but obviously some people have thought about it, and they're willing to provide it, so that's kind of exciting. I also met with, again, the CEO of another hospital and a cardiothoracic surgeon, as I mentioned earlier, and, you know, I talked up the nutrition program and how nutrition needs to play a role in the hospitals and, you know, these post-bypass patients that are getting fed, you know, roast beef because people think that they need extra protein for healing, and, you know, to try to bring some attention, you know, that plant-based nutrition is great. You know, I'm walking the walk. We talked last night. You know, I run marathons. The CEO used to run marathons. Now he plays some tennis. He's my age. He quit playing because of aches and pains. The cardiothoracic surgeon does no exercise whatsoever. He's significantly overweight. When we ordered, we went up to get a salad last night. They had a salad bar. You know, they had these tiny little plates of salad. I had this big giant plate of salad with beets and cucumbers and onions. And, you know, it was, you know, a heaped up salad with all the fixings. And I looked over and they had, you know, like a little plate of lettuce. So, you know, it's education all around on all aspects. And, you know, when somebody, emailed me and they had been in the hospital in Australia actually and had a baby, and they had a lot of nutrition options, and you know, the people were actually very supportive that she'd had a pregnancy that was all vegan and her child was very healthy, so that was a great news. I also had another email from Pennsylvania where they're doing well with 5 or 6 dishes of plant-based nutrition options. So, you know, it continues to grow. And, you know, the more we can spread the word, the better to get these hospitals to offer plant-based options. Changing not only, you know, I'm changing my practice, but, you know, maybe where you're at, you're seeing that corporate medicine is taking over primary care practices, and they... These people have 10 minutes to see patients. They may see 40 or 50 patients a day. There's no way they can address this stuff. The concierge type practices are allowing people to spend more time. But again, nutrition has not entered into a lot of those practices yet. But I think that's a great place for nutrition medicine to enter into primary care practices, because we're going to need to prevent it, because there's just no way that our current system can sustain this degree of disease care that we're, you know, continuing to create. You know, this just fixing things as they break, and they're breaking on a rapid basis, is just not working. We'll provide you with updates as how this practice starts to evolve. Hopefully we'll get the word out, and more people, maybe more docs will start to do it, and more docs will become confident that they can also change their practice and practice the way they want to, as opposed to the way the big corporate medicine would suggest that they practice. I think what I eat on Instagram at Jamila Delaney, and of course I'm on Facebook, and you can please check out my website at drdelaney.com. It will be evolving. It's drdelaney.com. Be running that Biltmore half marathon and whole marathon. So if you listen to this podcast and you're up to running those races, I'd love to meet you. Next after that will be Mendocino 50K with Sid Garza-Hillman and his crew, a vegan ultra marathon. So that'll be great. So keep running, keep gardening, and keep eating your vegetables.